And in this program, she was one of those that we saw. But she was excited. We saw her getting ready. She had a beautiful outfit that she'd bought because she wanted to impress the queen. So she got her outfit ready. Then we saw her a little bit later in the line, just about to meet the queen to be introduced. And she was enthusiastic. And then she said something that really caught my attention, particularly as we look at this particular sermon series. And she said, "I am so excited about meeting the Queen. I just hope I don't burst into song." She was scared. She was so full of joy that she just burst into song. That is the reaction of many people who are so overwhelmed by their circumstances, the things that are happening around them, and especially when God impacts their life, that they literally want to burst into song. And this Advent, as we work through the season preparing for that most stunning of all events, the coming of God into this world at Christmas, as we prepare for that, we're looking at some of the key characters of that Christmas story and how they burst into song because of what they were experiencing of God in their lives. So we started a couple of weeks ago with Zechariah's song, given the title Benedictus, from the Latin of the word that he used to open it up. Praise be, or blessed be God. Benedictus, as he held in his arms his child who was John the Baptist, knowing that this child was the one who would prepare the way for the Messiah. Last week, we moved on and we looked at Mary's song. And guess what? This has got a title as well, also from the Latin, the Magnificat. And on this occasion, it comes from her saying, "Magnified, my soul magnifies the Lord." She had been told she was going to have a child. She would be blessed above all women through all eternity because of the child who would be Jesus, God's son. And even though she knew she was about to face a world of criticism and blame and shame because she was not yet married but was going to be pregnant, she still magnified the Lord. That was her soul bursting with joy. And so we come to this morning's Simeon's song. Now, you might have heard of the title of the first two, Benedictus or Magnificat, but I suspect you've not heard of the third one, Simeon's song, given the Latin name Nunc Dimittis, which literally means "now depart." Now let me depart. Now let me die. Really? Song of joy? Really? Now release me to depart in peace? A song of joy? Well, let me explain where this comes from and what is behind it. Let me give you the background to Simeon's song. Like Zechariah, Simeon was a priest. Like Zechariah, Simeon was also an elderly man. And this is a very personal song of joy that is so intense because he knows a number of things that are true because of it. And this song teaches us that he sees ancient hopes being finally realized. It's a song that speaks of dramatic transformation. He knows that cultures are going to be turned on their heads. He knows that deep divisions that have existed from the beginning of time are about to come to an end. And he will reveal in this song a stunning truth about us that comes because of Jesus' birth. That's the song, and that's the main emphasis that we're going to look at this morning. But just note, there's someone else involved in the passage that Derek read to us. Did you notice? Simeon isn't alone in his celebration. There's also a godly woman by the name of Anna. And she adds to Simeon's blessings, and she teaches us something as well. So we'll come to that. And the reason they both teach us something is that they know they are standing at a point that marks an absolute turning point in history, a pivotal moment since time began. So let's think about this song. First, it reveals a life which signals release. And as I've already said, the release in this context particularly is a release for Simeon to die. He's a really elderly man, but before he would die, there was just one thing he had to see. There was just one thing that he was longing for. And the explanation comes in verse 26. It had been revealed to him by the Holy Spirit that he would not die before he had seen the Lord's Christ or Messiah. That's what he'd been promised. And so he was moved by the Spirit and he went into the temple courts. And when the parents of Jesus came to bring him, as was the custom of the law, to make him the presentation of that first child to the Lord in recognition, in thanksgiving, Simeon took him in his arms and he praised God. And these are the words that he said: Sovereign Lord, as you have promised, you may now dismiss your servant in peace. And it is those two words, now dismiss, that give us our title, Nunc Dimittis. Now dismiss. That now is a declaration that signals that a dramatic change is taking place as he speaks. Right here, right now, in this specific moment of history that will never be repeated, before his very eyes and lying in his arms is what everybody who would be familiar with the Old Testament teachings, with the Jewish writings, would have been expecting. They were waiting for. They were looking out for this moment, this promised event, foretold in prophecy. This is that moment of history coming into being. The Messiah was here. How often can we say that we were there at that moment that history changed? Were any of you there when the Berlin Wall came down? No, I didn't think so. Were any of you there when President Kennedy was shot? No. Were any of you involved when Neil Armstrong took that first step and landed on the moon? Wow, wouldn't it have been something else if you had been there for such a moment as that? Significant moments for nations, for politics, for science and exploration. But I'm going to suggest to you, utterly insignificant, every one of them, compared to this moment that Simeon is experiencing for himself. A moment where the whole of mankind, all of us, everyone who's ever lived and would live, suddenly intersect with God himself. Emmanuel, God with us. Israel had been told that this was what they should wait for, and every priest would know it. Zechariah knew it. Simeon knew it. And they'd have been waiting, longing for this moment. Do you know what it's like to really wait and long for something? Let me take you back in history. Just in your mind, just imagine. 250 years or so, go back in time. The world's a very different place. Australia's never been discovered as yet. But there are ships sailing the seas that are pushing the boundaries, that are going further and further, looking for that as yet undisclosed promised land. Just imagine. And on board every one of those ships would have been a watchman. And the watchman would have been way up, high up in the crow's nest of those tall ships, looking out, scanning the horizon, looking for land, or at least maybe cloud formations that are an indication of land. Searching, longing. That was their job, to look. Biding their time. They would be there not just for a few days, but for weeks, maybe months. Perhaps after a time, some of these ships would find that their food and water supply would start to go low. The crews would start to get a little bit titchy, restless, desperate. Long days in a burning sun, dehydration, they're longing, but the guy up there in the crow's nest is watching, longing for what they need, they know they need. Just imagine that day when suddenly something in the distance, he identifies, he's not just cloud, it's the land. And it's there, coming into view. So they scream down, yell down to the captain and report. He may be weary, but he's been obedient, and he reports to the captain. Land. His job is done. I give you Simeon. Lord, as you have promised, now you can dismiss your servant in peace. His duty was done, and he could literally die in peace. That's the reason he knows he can be dismissed. But even more than that, verse 30 tells us why this moment is of such global significance, so decisive for him and for us. For my eyes have seen your salvation, which you have prepared in the sight of all peoples, a light for revelation to the Gentiles and the glory of your people Israel. The reason this is a song of joy is that Simeon is singing about God's rescue plan for the whole of humanity. This tiny infant, just a few weeks old, is God's Messiah. And the child is the one that the entire nation of Israel has been waiting for, longing for centuries. But even that is not the full extent. It doesn't do justice to the full mission of who this child was. Because he was coming to bring mercy and bring salvation to far beyond the boundaries of any one nation. Let me remind you what the prophet Isaiah had written hundreds of years before this about Jesus. Isaiah 49:6 says, "It is too small a thing for you to be my servant to restore the tribes of Jacob and bring back those of Israel I have kept." Too small. No, there's more. "I will also make you a light for the Gentiles." That's in our verse. "That my salvation may reach the ends of the earth." This is why he's so enthusiastic, so joyful. Just restoring the glory of an oppressed and sinful nation wasn't good enough. God had bigger plans for his son. He was going to bring hope to all people in all places over all time. And that includes you. And you can name any significant event in history that you like, and it becomes trivial compared to this world-changing moment. And Simeon is holding it in his arms. Wow. No wonder this is such a personal message. My eyes have seen your salvation. And that's the reason that now no life mission could possibly even compare. Nothing was of such relevance. And he was at peace to be with his Maker from that moment onwards. As we approach Christmas, I wonder, are you able to see all that lies ahead of you? All the detail of which you don't know. Whatever that will be that you will face, are you able to see all of that as being just merely in the shadow of God's salvation plan? Well, more important than anything this Christmas is that you are prepared to meet God and seeing in Jesus your only hope of reconciliation, restoration, and peace
with God.
That's the message of this song. But I said there was a little more than just the song. There's something else here as well. In this life, there is a signal that this life brings with it suffering. Mary and Joseph, we read, are absolutely blown away by what Simeon had said to them. They're so encouraged by this blessing that Simeon has given. But I really suspect they're not entirely pleased to hear the next bit that he says. Verses 34 and 5, as Simeon turns to Mary specifically and says this. This child is destined to cause the falling and rising of many in Israel, and to be a sign that will be spoken against, so that the thoughts of many hearts will be revealed, and a sword will pierce your own soul too. He tells her her child would divide a nation. He'd be a sign from heaven, and it's a sign that a choice has to be made. Accept him or reject him, for him or against him. There's no sitting on the fence. It is heaven or it is hell, and there is no in between. And her child would reveal this message. He'll lift up the humble, and he will humble the proud and the powerful. He'd reveal true intentions of people's hearts, but people wouldn't like the truth to be told about them or to them. And as a result, it would be costly. And Mary wouldn't like what would happen to Jesus as a result of what he would do. And a sword would pierce Mary's soul too. But that was what was necessary for Jesus to fulfill his mission. Mary was being warned she would need to suffer for Jesus. And so it is for you and me. Let me read to you some words from Philippians chapter 1. Paul writing, whatever happens, conduct yourselves in a manner worthy of the gospel of Christ. Stand firm in the one spirit, striving together as one for the faith of the gospel. Here's the uncomfortable bit. For it has been granted to you on behalf of Christ, not only to believe in him, but also to suffer for him. And the blessing of Jesus in our lives, I believe, is a blessing and gives a fulfillment that is beyond comparison with anything else. Those moments of intimacy with God are more special than anything I have ever come close to experiencing in any other way. But it comes at a cost. And Jesus' mission would come and would cost him the cross. And I can't imagine what it was like, but I can imagine it must have been unthinkable pain for his mother, Mary, to see him hanging there. And we too are called to carry our cross. Suffering is a part of the Christian life. And actually, sometimes it's the means through which we find God. And sometimes it is the means through which we find a deeper relationship with God. And make no mistake, the call, therefore, is not to reject him when life gets tough, but to invite him to be there, to help us to bear whatever we need to suffer, whatever is difficult, and in a manner that is worthy of him, asking, as we will need to, for grace along the way, as we need to face opposition, as we face illness, as we face pain, and as we face loss. The kind of loss and pain that Anna knew very well. Because she was that other character. She was present, this elderly lady who'd lost her husband after just 7 years of marriage. And since that time had nonetheless committed herself totally to the Lord. And she added her praise to testify to Jesus. And isn't it that testimony, even in the face of the struggles that we go through, that invites others to discover Jesus for themselves. It's a life that signals suffering. And one other little message that comes with it as well. It is a life that signals hope. Something really struck me about this scene, the whole scene. In fact, about all of the scenes that we've been looking at through the whole of this Advent season and the characters involved. Did you notice? It is the extremes of the ages of all the parties involved. Isn't it interesting that God chose an elderly Elizabeth and Zechariah before this to be the parents of John the Baptist? And yet, at the opposite end, he chose a teenager in Mary to be the mother of this child, Jesus. And now we've got Simeon and Anna described as being at the point of death. Bit tough, but hey. And yet, it's with all of their life's experience that they are valued as witnesses. They know what it is. The message is this, and I want to encourage you with it. It is, we are never too old or too young to be wholeheartedly devoted to the Lord or to have the hope of Jesus within us. And yet so often that's not the way we seem to experience things. I talk to young people who feel, oh, I'll get really serious about God when I'm older. I did the same when I was young. Oh, I've got my education to sort out, got my career, need to sort my marriage. You know, I want to get all these things sorted out. Lord, I'm with you. And we put it off. And then those approaching their twilight years, if I can put that more politely, so often they express the opposite view. Well, you know, I'm slowing down a little bit. Time for these youngsters to step up now. I want to say something to both viewpoints. First, to those who still have that youthful energy and vigor within them, I say this. There is nothing more important this Christmas than ensuring that you are right with God. Because none of us know how long we have or what life will bring. I learned that lesson when I was 11. And I, Steve Rudge, went to my grammar school and was met by people who said, oh, are you related to James Rudge? And everybody knew him. James Rudge, head boy, winner of all the competitions, name and fastest runner, threw the javelin furthest, and died when I was just 11. Of leukemia. Whole world ahead of him. None of us know how long we've got. But I'll tell you this, I have come to understand one thing, that when challenges come, I would not like to face any of them without the Lord and his guidance and his comfort alongside me. He's faithful. This is what we read in James chapter 4. Come now, you who say, today or tomorrow, we'll go to such and such city, spend a year there and engage in business and make a profit. You don't know what your life will be like tomorrow. You are just a vapor that appears for a little while and then vanishes away. Instead, you ought to say, if the Lord wills, we will live and also do this or that. But as it is, you boast in your arrogance, and all such boasting is evil. And that's the reason that Scripture speaks so much about focusing on today. Look now is the acceptable time. Look now is the day of salvation. 2 Corinthians 6. Hebrews 3 says, today, if you hear his voice, do not harden your hearts. A few verses later, encourage each other daily while it is still called today, so that none of you is hardened by sin's deception. If you don't consider yourself in that little group who's looking forward with all the energy that you think you have ahead of you, if you are one of the elderly, then I humbly wish to make this suggestion, and I say so with respect. You may need to slow down physically, fine. Please be blessed in that. But don't let your heart or your fervor for God go into retirement, because that would be a tragedy. Like Simeon and Anna. And years before, God had made it clear to Simeon that he wouldn't face death until he'd seen the Lord's Messiah. I wonder what it was like for him. The following day, the following week, but Jesus didn't come. And the week after that, and the weeks passed, and the months passed, and the years passed, and the decades passed, and still nothing changed. What about Anna? Anna too, I am sure, dreamed of a glorious life, happily married, but her husband died just 7 years afterwards. Things had not turned out like Anna had planned, and now she's 84, the sunset of her life. And it would have been easy for this elderly widow and this elderly man to conclude that all their best days were behind them and to just live in the nostalgia of those days of energy and vigor that they used to know and all those bygone memories. But instead, they persevered and they said, "Lord, show me something today." And they trusted God's plan and they stayed faithful and responsive, and they saw Jesus in the most stunning way in their lives. I want to close with a story. If you think that you are old and have nothing to offer or little to offer. True story. So I'm going to actually read and quote from some of the sort of reports of the time. On November the 18th, 1995, Itzhak Perlman, the master violinist, came on stage for a concert at New York. Now for him, just getting on stage was a heck of a performance in its own right, real achievement. He'd been stricken with polio as a child. He had braces on both legs, and so he had to walk with the aid of two crutches. And as he did so, every step that he took was slow and deliberate and painful. But he would make his way across the stage, one step at a time. And then he'd come to his seat, and slowly he'd sit down, he'd put his crutches on the floor, he'd undo the clasps on the legs, braces that he was wearing. And he took one foot behind him, and then he'd put the next foot in front of him. And then he'd bend down, he'd pick up the violin, and he'd place it under his chin. After all that, he'd signal to the conductor that he was ready. And they'd begin. That was one heck of a ritual. But the audience all knew it was coming, and they understood it and accepted it. But on this day, November the 18th, 1995, something went wrong. And just as he'd finished the first few bars, one of the strings of his violin broke. Twang. They say it was like a gunshot being fired. And there was no mistaking what the sound meant. And people all thought to themselves, "Oh dear, he's going to have to get up again, redo the clasps, pick up his crutches, walk across the stage, get another violin, or maybe change the string, and then come back and go through the whole process all over again." But he didn't. Instead, he just waited for a moment, he closed his eyes, and then he signaled the conductor to begin again. And the orchestra began, and he played from where he'd left off. And they say he played with such passion, such power, and such purity as they'd never heard before. Now, of course, everyone knows it's impossible to play a symphonic work with just three strings. You know it, I know it, but on this particular day, Itzhak Perlman refused to know that. They say you could see him modulating, changing, recomposing the piece in his head. At one point, they say it looks like he was detuning the strings to get new sounds from them that they'd never made before. And when he'd finished, there was an awesome silence. the whole room quiet. And then people rose to their feet and they cheered. There's an extraordinary outburst of applause from every corner of this auditorium. Everyone was on their feet screaming and cheering because they knew what they'd just witnessed. Well, eventually he smiled. He wiped the sweat from his brow and he raised his bow just to quieten everybody down. And then he said, not boastfully, but in a quiet, pensive and reverent tone, he said, you know, sometimes it is the artist's task to find out how much music you can still make with what you have left. Age and circumstances should never be the issue for God's people. And like Zechariah and Mary and Simeon, I want to ask the question this morning, do you have a song in your heart for God as you go through Advent this year? What music do you have left to offer the Lord as you consider what he offered for you in coming at Christmas and in dying at Easter? It doesn't matter how little you feel you have to give. What matters is that you come willing and passionate about what God has given you. You could just offer a sentence of encouragement, just a smile to lift someone up, a quiet, silent prayer at home for someone you know is struggling. Well, I want to encourage you to find for yourself that chord of faith, love, hope. I've forgotten the last one. Joy. Thank you. Joy. I encourage you to find that. And that will then stir perhaps the next generation in coming to know something of the Lord, because that's the significance of Jesus coming at Christmas. We want to prepare ourselves now for communion, which is perhaps the best example of Christ's love for you. And as we do so, I'm going to play a piece of music written by the very violinist I've just spoken of. And how appropriate that he would write this piece of music to accompany the film Schindler's List. So you'll know it. It's hauntingly stunning and beautiful. Just listen to it. Just think what some have offered and what God has given you that you can offer for him this Christmas.